Hello, I'm Fiona and I'm in Greenwich and it is a beautiful day. I'm sitting at the bottom edge of Greenwich Park under the dappled shade of an oak tree, looking out, and I can see blue of sky, green of trees and leaves, and a little flash of white beneath the trees that is the National Maritime Museum. And for me, the passage of time here is marked by the occasional thump of an acorn falling from the oak tree onto the ground beside me. You might also hear occasionally the thump of runners' feet as joggers come past on the path nearby, or perhaps the excited voices of children enjoying this beautiful sunny day in the park. But I'm sitting under this oak tree, which is one of an avenue of trees stretching up the park, up the hill towards the Royal Observatory, the home of time, which is a sort of slightly mad claim. I mean, time doesn't live in any place. Time is universal and inexplicable. And if actually in Britain you want to find something that is arguably the birthplace of time, or perhaps not time itself, but the birthplace of the measurement of time, then we should look way, way back and much further west towards Stonehenge. Stonehenge, the stones that we see today set up 4,500 years ago, back way before any idea of clocks, any reliable way of measuring hours and seconds and minutes. And yet they managed to erect stones that line up perfectly with the morning sun and the setting sun on the longest and shortest days of the year. And that in itself, when you consider the Bronze Age tools that they would be working with, the antlers that they would use as picks, the shoulder blades of beasts that they used as shovels to manoeuvre the stones into position, the stones that were used to chip stones into shape. How did they record the infinitesimal differences in the length of the days to even work out which was the longest day, let alone the position that the sun rose over the hilltops at, you know, that particular point? It's an astonishing achievement, but it also shows that mankind throughout our history have wanted to categorize, to make sense, to measure time. And of course nowadays we use hours and minutes and seconds and days and weeks, and they are standard across the globe. But time wasn't always standardized, and if Greenwich has a claim to fame, then it is perhaps that time was standardized from here. Internationally, not until the 1880s. 1884, we had an international conference to decide where 0 degrees latitude was to be set, and Greenwich was decided to be the place. So this is where East meets West. And that in many ways makes entirely sense, because the Royal Observatory was set up here in the 1700s, in the 1600s, 1670s. And its purpose originally was to map the heavens. And it was partly to help to make sense of positioning on Earth. The position of latitude was very hard for ships to work out. And many ships were lost at sea because they weren't where they thought they were. They sailed into islands in fog and so on.
And so finding a way that sailors could work out their latitude became a pressing issue in the early 1700s. And the thought was that by mapping the heavens, you could use then those charts, look at the skies, and find out your spot. But for the astronomers to map the heavens, they needed clocks. They needed accurate clocks to see when they were taking their readings. And so it was the clocks that enabled the mapping of the heavens that would then enable our positioning on Earth. But in fact, it turned out that the clocks themselves could enable people to calculate their position and latitude. If your clock was accurate enough, then you didn't need the heavens' involvement. And it was a man called Harrison who designed a series of clocks of increasing accuracy that enabled sailors eventually to work out their position. And his clocks had to cope with the changes of conditions. If you're on a sea journey, you have not only the movement of the waves for the mechanism to cope with, but also the changes in temperature. If you sail from London to Jamaica, then there's a temperature difference on the way, and metals will expand and contract according to temperature, all of which can affect the running, the timekeeping of a clock. So he worked on this for many years, and several of his versions of his clocks are now in the Royal Observatory in Greenwich. And if you come to visit, you can see not only the telescopes, but also Harrison's timepieces that eventually solved the problem of latitude. But the various astronomers over the years here would set up meridians. And a meridian was a slice north-south across the sky, where they would take measurements of the heavens. So when we started to standardise time, which in Britain was in the 1830s, 40s, because the railways were being established. Before then, it didn't matter if in Oxford you were 4 minutes behind London, or in the West Country 10 minutes behind London time. You fitted your time to the hours of daylight, and that made sense. But when you have a railway system spanning the breadth of the country, you need to produce a timetable, and that timetable needs London and Oxford and Bath and Exeter to all be on the same time system. And the time that was adopted was the time here in Greenwich. And in 1836, a lady called Maria started collecting the time from Greenwich and selling it to other businesses. She had a pocket watch called Arnold, and every day she would come to Greenwich and she would set Arnold by the time of the clock at the observatory. And then she would make her way down to the City of London and she would sell that accurate time to the businesses of the city. Because they couldn't listen to the radio and hear the beeps of the time signal on the BBC. They couldn't ring up the talking clock the way that none of us do anymore, but that you used to be able to find the accurate time at the end of a telephone line, but not in the 1840s. They relied on Maria and Arnold to bring the time to them. And Maria carried on this service until the 1890s, whereupon her daughter Ruth took over, and Ruth was still selling the time to merchants in the city in the 1940s, until 1940 is when she stopped. And it is astonishing that it was still a feasible business for her to be doing that in 1940, or 39 perhaps. Nowadays, we have a watch about our person, we have a clock, we might have some other computer device. In our house, we have a clock on our oven, we have a clock on the video, we have a clock by the bedside table, we have an alarm, we have a radio, we have endless ways to check the exact time, and some of them are picking up the signal automatically from Rugby, where the sort of time signal is distributed now. But when they built town halls in Victorian times in the 1800s, almost every town hall features a clock somewhere on it, because in some cases that would be the clock for the town, and only the wealthy could afford an accurate clock. Everyone else had to have some public clock to measure the time. There is a clock which hangs off the front of a church, St. Magnus the Martyr, in the city of London, and it used to hang over London Bridge. So if you came into London by road from south to north, over the bridge you would see the time. And the theory is it was given in the 1700s by a man, a mayor, Lord Mayor of the City of London. He grew up, he did well in business, but as a boy, or as an apprentice, he was told off for being late. And he thought, well, I don't know I'm late. How am I supposed to know? I haven't got a clock, I haven't got a watch, I can't tell. When I grow up, I'm going to put up a clock so that everyone can know what the time is, and they can arrive on time and they won't be told off for being late. And he did. He became Lord Mayor and he paid for the clock that hangs outside St. Magnus the Martyr. But there is another way in which Greenwich shares time with the world. The time ball that sits on the top of the Royal Observatory. The time ball, right on top of the observatory building, there is a spike, and sitting mostly at the bottom of the spike is a ball which is hollow, and I'm feeling might be made out of papier-mâché, but don't quote me on that. But it's nice and light, and just before 1 o'clock, it's either 5 to, 3 minutes to, something like that, it rises up the spike halfway, pauses, then goes up to the top, and then exactly at 1 o'clock it drops. And the time ball was designed to share the exact time with sea captains on the Thames. So the bend of the river near Greenwich, you get a pretty good view up the hill towards the observatory, and everyone on board ship could set their clocks at the exact right time at 1 o'clock each day from the time ball. Now, if you were further upstream, if you were in the Port of London, then you couldn't see Greenwich. But there is another church, St. Anne's Limehouse, that relays the time to people further up the river, because St. Anne's Limehouse has a tower and a spike and a ball, just like the one on top of the observatory. And they would, at some exact amount of time after Greenwich, they would repeat the same procedure again, and the time ball would drop, and people further upriver could set their clocks by the time ball of St. Anne's. And at the moment, the time ball in Greenwich is not working. And, well, it might have started again by now, I haven't checked yet. But a few weeks ago I asked about it, and they said it would restart in a couple of weeks. So it may be working again now. The man who looks after the time ball was furloughed during lockdown, so they were waiting for him to be unfurloughed. And it's not just a case of turning on the mechanism. During the time of lockdown, we've had extreme hot weather, we've had extremely wet weather. It's very likely that the shaft might have warped slightly. The last time they turned it off for any length of time, they had to do quite a bit of work on it to get it started again, because when it's not in use, the parts kind of stick and warp and bend, and it needs a bit of adjustment. So what they said is, we're waiting for the man to come back from being furloughed, and then he'll have a look at it, and he might have to settle it, and then the time ball will restart. And I think that seems to be right. I mean, there's a sense in which the time ball at Greenwich is a bit like the chimes of Big Ben. They function a bit like an old watch crier, the sort of town crier who used to go out through the night and ring a bell and say 11 o'clock and all is well. And to me, the chimes of Big Ben feel a bit like that. Until they started the restoration works recently, so about 3 years ago they started works on the Elizabeth Tower, and since then Big Ben has been silent apart from special occasions. But Big Ben, the bell that chimes on the hour, used to be played live on the radio at 12 o'clock each night. And the fact that that was coming live from central London was a reassuring presence that all was well. And the time ball feels a little bit like that as well, but it also feels entirely appropriate that during lockdown our most famous clock, the national clock, if you like, of Big Ben, and the time ball of Greenwich, the home of time itself, the purveyor of time through the years, that they've both been silent, or still. Because I think everyone would agree that during lockdown, time has done some funny stuff. I mean, there's certain things I've done, and they might have been 3 days ago. They might have been 2.5 months. It might have been years. I don't know. I can't tell the difference anymore. Time has shrunk and contracted, and yet at the same time, elongated. And some people have had endless time to fill. Others have had not enough hours in the day to get stuff done. Oh, there's a helicopter flying overhead. So, during lockdown, with this weird summer that we've had, and it seems very odd that it's September, it can't possibly be September already, it seems appropriate that our clock and our time ball have been silent and still. But hopefully, maybe when the time ball restarts, it will also be a chance for us to recalibrate our time, and that maybe this summer we've had the space to think about our daily life and our routines and our life-work balance. And hopefully when we restart time, we will restart in a way that makes more sense for each of us individually. Fingers crossed. Hello again. I'm back at home, but I wanted to finish off with a little update on the time ball, because it should, in normal times, rise halfway up the shaft at 12:55. At 12:58, it continues up to the top of the shaft, and at precisely 1 p.m, it will drop down to the bottom. So the photo that accompanies this blog was taken at 12:57. As you can see, the time ball is still sitting at the bottom of the shaft. So, the ball still needs fettling. We are still in limbo, and anything is possible.